Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Thanks for coming back to my channel. I'm celebrating the Act of Union. Well, yesterday was the anniversary of it, sounded 1707. So this is where Scotland, Wales and England all agreed to unite. Now, Wales and England already been united since about 1535, an Act of Parliament passed under Henry VIII. I know Wales and England had some political connections since the 11th century, but they weren't fully integrated until the 16th century. So the Act of Union wasn't completely novel. Scotland had been represented in a parliament along with England and Wales in the 13th century. I think Ireland, we had two very briefly. Then, of course, under Cromwell, there was the Commonwealth of Great Britain and Ireland. So that was united again. Anyway, so in Scotland, there were unionists and anti-unionists. And it was brought about partly because of the dairy invention, which went wrong, where some people in North Britain, they decided to put so much wealth into this harebrained scheme to set up some trading post in Panama and sell the things that people urgently crave in a tropical climate, such as wool. And Scotland invested a serious percentage of its national wealth in this, which, as you can imagine, was cataclysmic. So that was very bad news. Now, obviously, Scotland and England had sometimes been semi-united before. Obviously, we'll get back to Roman Britain, Britannia. There was no notion of England or Scotland or Wales in those days. And Britannia, as the Romans called it, Britannicae, actually Britannicae in Greek is referring to Ireland and Great Britain, was Wales, England, Roman Britannia and southern Scotland. But they're only in southern Scotland up to about the Firth of Forth for perhaps a century and then retreated from there, built Hadrian's Wall, which is completely in England, but some places very close to Scotland. Some kings of England had claimed to be overlords of Scotland. Edward I called himself King of Scots. Henry VIII called himself King of Scots and could have effectively controlled Scotland had he not turned his attention towards France. So there was no novelty in this. And Scotland and England had shared a monarch since 1603, since James VI of Scots became James I of England. But he only returned to Scotland once. His son, Charles I, born in Dunfermline Palace, I think never returned, actually, and so on. And obviously, Henry VIII became King of Ireland, and all the kings of England thereafter were also King of Ireland. They've been integrated, well, almost for a century. Now, James I had promised that North Britain did not have to copy South Britain and vice versa. Scotland kept its own parliament, its distinct church, the Church of Scotland, with Presbyterian for a while, then changed to an Episcopalian format and so forth, and partly trying to make Scotland follow England in its norms, was what caused that Covenanter rebellion in the 1630s. So finally, this had been happened. I mean, you know, James I had considered an act of union very early in his reign, but it didn't come to happen. Okay, and the one thing obviously disputes about who should be monarch, because if James II was overthrown in South Britain, could he still be king of North Britain and so forth in the exclusion crisis? But notably, William of Orange, he's quickly accepted as King of Scots, as well as King of England. Because remember, before the Restoration in England, many in Scots have been willing to welcome Charles II back. Another thing is the shared Protestantism, and it's not a big deal as well. But obviously in Ireland, most of us are Catholic. But Protestants were a high majority in England by 1707. You know, I'm thinking about 99%. In Wales, likewise. In Scotland, like about 90%. But there was that. And of course, the English language spread in Scotland. They weren't just speaking Scots or Lallans, as some of them called it, and so forth. And then England and Wales had the East India Company, the colonies in the Americas. And if Scotland wanted a share of this, it had to join England and Wales. So for security and so on. So Queen Anne was in favor and they proposed this union. It was proposed. So the Duke of Queensbury, the Duke of Hamilton were some of the major politicians in North Britain, you know, Lord Chancellor. Sidney Godolphin was the dominant political figure in England at the time. Partly they're fighting the war of Spanish succession for, you know, over 10 years then. The Scots army, the English army were separate, but they were on the same side. Remember, Scotland made the side of France against England a lot of time because of the old alliance, the belief that Scotland could only survive as a separate country if it had a potent ally in Western Europe. And that was France, England's principal foe. So Ireland, we've actually been politically connected to England for much longer than Scotland has. So the Treaty of Union was passed in 1707 by 110 votes to 69. Now, What was his name? Daniel Defoe was in it in Scotland. I suppose he's an English spy, saying that 99 out of 100 people were against. Well, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. And people say it was bought and sold for English gold, that bribes were paid. And by the way, there was no law against paying douceur to persuade people to vote this way or that. And supposedly, when the announcement was made, a crowd outside the Scots Parliament was unicameral, chanted, "No union in English dogs." I don't know if that's reflective of public opinion. Was it an elite consensus? Remember, it was certainly not democratic. Only a small minority of people were permitted to vote in Caledonia at the time. So the wealthy people, the educated people. Remember, some people, even into the early 20th century, were illiterate, others literate to a very low level. But you can still have illiterates vote. It's worked in India in recent times. Okay, so we go on. And that was it. So it happened. The Duke of Queensbury was behind it. What was to be done about peers? If people had a title relating to Scotland, that wouldn't grant him the right to sit in the House of Lords of the United Kingdom. There were some Scottish representative peers. Any titles created relating to place in Scotland after 1707 would result in an automatic right to sit in the Chamber of Peers and so forth. Okay, so the Duke of Queensbury came to Kensington Palace and met Queen Anne. The royal family didn't own Buckingham Palace at the time. It was Buckingham House. So that was passed, and the Act took effect on the 1st of May 1707. Okay, but some people were mournful about it in Scotland. There were lamentations, many articles, a lot about the economy. The Scots pound continued separate to the English pound. Gradually, they accepted the pound sterling, but pounds Scots continued to be a unit of account, even though they weren't coins and banknotes weren't separate, but just so people would know how much it's worth under the old system. The Church of Scotland still remained Presbyterian. Scotland retained its distinctive legal system and so forth, educational system, etc. Okay, so and then leading into unionism, into the Jacobite rebellion, some people were anti-unionists, and that was partly a motivation behind it. Not that Bonnie Prince Charlie necessarily would have reversed the Act of Union. But by the 19th century, that was the zenith of unionism. And even the idea of devolution to Scotland was bitterly unpopular. There was some Scottish Home Rule Party in the late 19th century. The Liberal Party flirted with it, the Labour Party looked at it, and so on. Obviously, this was somewhat undone in 1997, that referendum. 1999, the Scots Parliament reopening, not complete separation, but now some people are agitating for it. So that's the Act of Union. Some people think it was highly successful, that enriched Scotland, provided Scotland with security, and there was no more war. There were no more wars between Scotland and South Britain. So was it a magnificent thing? I think it was splendiferous. Nobody says Scotland doesn't exist. Nobody says people aren't Scots. It has not negated their identity. So it's been beneficial to all. Obviously, then Ireland, we climbed on board in 1801. Alas and alack, the major portion of Ireland seceded from the United Kingdom in 1921, 1922, if you prefer. That's it, which is a very retrograde and lamentable step, which I very much like to see resolved. But there's not the slenderest indication that that's going to happen in the foreseeable future. Well, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon and PayPal, and do what you can to work to preserve the union.